The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
From the Sky Eye Weather Center, this is meteorologist Rich Apuzzo, and you are listening to a special edition of the Weather Rush, this climate change special, here on the Flypod, and linked to you through skyeyeweather.com. Recently in 2014, there was a national climate assessment, a large report released by the government that made a lot of national headlines, but the fact is the report was highly erroneous and really irresponsible in the eyes of many experts across the nation. And we're going to take a quick look at some of the claims being made in that report and what the facts are, because the facts disagree completely with the image being portrayed by this national climate assessment that the president and the administration supports. First of all, they have gone to a new term. Remember, this all started with global warming. The reason global warming did not stick wasn't because it didn't work as a pretty descriptor. It sounds nice, global warming. You still hear people saying that. Global warming, easy to remember, kind of tells you what the planet is doing, or at least what they said it was doing. And when you think of warming overall, especially as you get the heat really building, you think of it as a negative. So it all seemed to be going very well until one thing happened, and that is the planet stopped warming. It didn't just stop warming. It stopped warming 17 and a half years ago, almost 18 years ago, based on satellite observations. We have about four or five data sets we actually use. The shortest period, and this was from a data set used at the University of Alabama in Huntsville, and they have changed some of their methodology. So going back 10 years was the shortest period that we found in all these records where there's been no change. The longest period, the remote sensing system, that's the satellite, the RSS, the remote sensing system, that goes 18 years, well, 17 years and so many months, almost 18 years with no warming since late 1997, early 1998. Absolutely amazing. 18 years. Well, like I said, 17 years. So the point is, there's been no warming. So what had to happen? We had to change the term. Now, the next term that came out after global warming was, of course, climate change. Well, now that's easy, right? You would think that by saying climate change, it would encompass everything. And how could you possibly refute that? If the climate's changing, we'll blame man. You see, because that works the best. And who can argue that the climate's changing? Oh, clearly it is. So as long as you get an uneducated public to buy into the idea that if climate changes, it's man's fault, you've got a win-win. Here's the problem. The public is not as uneducated as some think. And many of you know that the climate changes anyway. It's supposed to. So how you can attribute certain changes to man, but then say that other changes are natural, is impossible. It's a challenge at best. There's just no way to do it because we don't know what the natural cycle would be if not for man's supposed influence. And remember, too, what man's influence is supposed to be. Carbon dioxide, plant food, the most life-giving gas on this planet. And it's at a level that when you look back at Earth's history based on ice cores and tree rings, but especially ice cores, and this is something scientists on both sides of the aisle use. When you look at ice cores, our CO2 levels are some of the lowest in Earth's history. So let's not scream CO2 going up as some sort of bad thing. It has been much higher. As I record this, it's at about 400 parts per million. It has been up well over 7,000 parts per million in the past. 400 is nothing, but it is significantly higher than it was when it was around 250 parts per million before the start of the industrial age. But so what? And who says that man's contribution of CO2 even jacked that up at all? It may have been going up anyway. You see, this is where we run into the real problem. How do we know where we're supposed to be and how much man has or has not done to to influence the climate, especially when you look at CO2, and we'll get to this in a moment, and the percentage of it and how much of an influence it really has on our planet's weather patterns and climate patterns. Well, climate change didn't work. That term didn't work either, because, again, people figured out, well, of course the climate changes. How's that our fault? So global warming didn't work. Climate change didn't work. So now what's the next one in this National Climate Assessment Report in 2014? It was, I believe, global climate disruption or just climate disruption. Either way, the word disruption. So now it puts a little different spin on it. It's not just a changing climate, but it's disruptive. That's right. Those thunderstorms are interrupting your day, and they shouldn't be. It should be sunny all the time. Or if you live in a tropical area, it should be stormy all the time. If you live in a desert, it should be dry all the time. We can't have this disruptive weather. Of course, they mean that a lot more severely, such as tornadoes ripping apart entire towns, hurricanes smashing into the coastline and sinking our cities, stuff like that. That's climate disruption. Okay. There's a reason they went to that. And again, it sounds bad and it sounds scary. And that is the point. It's propaganda. The problem is, and I love this. I mean, I don't know if nature and God are paying attention to all this and saying, we're going to have a little fun with you. But the bottom line is every time they try and paint a worse picture, our climate actually grows quieter and more pleasant. So if anything, I keep hoping these guys get scarier and scarier because it's getting nicer out. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, hurricane numbers have been dropping dramatically. After 2005, that was a really busy year. We haven't had a lot to talk about. Oh, sure, you get the Sandy, you get the Katrina, but Sandy actually made landfall as a tropical storm. It wasn't even a tropical storm. It wasn't even a hurricane anymore. Sandy, and I did a presentation on this not too long ago, showing a bunch of research. Sandy was the strongest down near Cuba. By the time it made landfall, or what was left of it, in New Jersey, it wasn't even a hurricane. So the fact is, Sandy was a hybrid storm, and something we've seen before, by the way. These are nothing new. We just haven't seen one in a long time. The last time we saw these monster New England-type storms was before all this climate disruption was going on. Do you know it has been 8+ years, almost 9 years, if we can make it to this fall, 9 years without a Category 3, which is considered a major hurricane, making landfall in the United States. In the period of record for our hurricanes going back to 1900, that has never happened before. Every day is a new record, because every day we're just adding to that total. We've never gone this long without a Category 3 storm making landfall. And if one does this year, so be it. We're overdue. But the fact is, strong hurricanes and their impacts on the United States have not been increasing. They've been decreasing. The actual hurricane numbers, you know, we've seen more storms in the Atlantic in recent years, mainly because we have better technology to see more storms in the Atlantic. 20, 30 years ago, we didn't have the types of satellites and microwaves from space that we can see all this energy now, see rotations so much easier, and start picking out tropical storms and hurricanes where before we never could identify them. So we can see more, but that doesn't mean there are more. And quite honestly, the bottom line is what's hitting our country, what affects the people. And if those numbers are down, and they are dramatically, then you can't argue that hurricane numbers are going up. They aren't. Hurricanes are no stronger. They're not. We saw many worse hurricanes in the past than we are now. We're not seeing much of anything. Now, that can change, and it should at some point. I mean, it's just part of a natural cycle. You're supposed to have hurricanes hit our land, but we haven't. Let's go to tornadoes. Last year, 2013, tornado numbers, all-time low. Lowest we've ever seen. 2014 started out on a track to beat 2013 for the quietest year ever. As we go through the end of May and I record this, we are now heading back on that track. There was an uptick in April and early May, and the numbers started jumping up, still well below normal. But tornado numbers, as we go into the summer of 2014, are at the lowest levels or some of the lowest levels in history. You can't argue there's more hurricanes and more tornadoes when they're not there. The numbers don't show it. We don't have more intense hurricanes. We don't have more intense tornadoes. It's simply not there. Flooding numbers have dropped off. Wildfires are at a 10-year low. I mean, sure, you hear about them in the news, and so it seems like a big story. Ooh, wildfires in San Diego, which, by the way, were started by arson. These are not naturally occurring. Well, if you want to start fires and start counting those in the numbers, then you're going to get artificial numbers. You can go have a whole bunch of people start fires, and look, we had a busy wildfire season. Yes, not because of nature, though, not because of climate change, not because of global climate disruption, but because someone went out there with matches and started throwing them into dry brush. And it led to fires, and they're arresting people in California for that. Wildfire numbers are down. There isn't a single metric, a single variable, a number you can come up with that has actually been on the increase aside from CO2 itself. You can't look at severe weather or disruptive weather and say there's been more of it. Heat records. We had more heat records in the 1930s than we do now. The level of heat, the number of heat waves, the death by heat waves even, has been dropping off. Fewer people die from extreme heat. More people die from extreme cold. Cold is what really kills. Heat does not. But we'll get into that medical talk some other time. The bottom line is, at no level, sea level rise. Sea level rise has been dropping. You know that sea levels are supposed to rise after major ice ages. Why? Because the ice is melting. The last ice age, the Little Ice Age, ended in the 1800s. Sea levels have been rising since then. Because there was more ice then, there's less ice now. Does that make sense? When you have ice melting off of continents, it causes sea levels to rise. If all the ice in the Arctic melted tomorrow, you would not notice a millimeter of difference in sea level rise. There's actually a scientific principle behind that. But just take a glass of water, put a bunch of ice in it, watch it melt. That water's not going to get any higher. It's displacement. So the Arctic, which is not a continent, if all that ice melts tomorrow, it means nothing. Not to our sea levels anyway. It means nothing. It won't go anywhere. You'd have to have all the Antarctic ice melt. And by the way, the Antarctic is setting records for ice levels in the years that we've been tracking it on satellites since the late 70s. We are now at the highest levels ever. Ever. It's growing. That's actually scary. I'd rather the Antarctic be shrinking. I don't want to see more ice on our planet. I want to see less. But we're getting more. Global ice coverage, as I record this, is above normal. Global ice levels are above normal, above our normal in the satellite record. And that's all we go by. It's all we really have. Now, we can go back to the past way before satellites, and there are ice records based on written, you know, testimony and navigational reports given by, you know, shipping and sailing. And, you know, all the way back to the 1700s, you can get reports on ice coverage in the Arctic, because whether or not they could complete a trip of shipping up there for the British Navy or the Dutch Navy or anyone else, they would then send these reports back. So we can track ice levels, but just not on a global scale with specific amounts like we can with satellites. In the satellite record, we are now above normal in ice, and Antarctica is setting records every day for the level of ice there, the highest ever seen. So, sea levels, which naturally rise after ice ages end because of melting ice, have slowed dramatically, are down to maybe 2 millimeters or something per year. 2 millimeters? You couldn't even measure that. Go to the ocean, try and measure a 2 millimeter movement in the water. Come on. It will take hundreds of years at that level for it to cover up anything, much less some airport or a city or anything else. It's just not going to happen. In fact, what will happen, and I will tell you this now, what will happen is sea levels will start to fall because we are heading into that next ice age. That is one of the natural cycles on our planet. We just came out of one of the weakest solar cycles, one of the 5 or 6 weakest solar cycles since we started tracking solar cycles in the 1700s. And every time we've seen a series of weak solar cycles, there's been dramatic planetary cooling, without exception. Not a single cycle, but when you have multiple cycles that are quiet, fewer sunspots, a weaker sun, we cool down, and a lot. And that's what happened during the Little Ice Age, and it's happening now. So we will see that sea level trend reverse. You won't probably hear it in the mainstream media till well after I'm dead and gone, but that's okay. The fact is, it's going to happen. So I'm not worried about sea levels because they're rising at about 2 millimeters, 2.4, whatever, per year. That's crazy slow. You're never going to see that. So that's not a problem. So what is our fear? Let me just give you a couple of quotes from a reply to this national climate assessment by a Dr. Don Easterbrook, and he does a fantastic job. He is a professor at the Department of Geology, Western Washington University in Bellingham, Washington. He says, science is based on the scientific method, which has been articulately described by Richard Feynman, a Caltech Nobel Prize-winning physicist. Here are the steps. Science, number one, is a method of finding things out by observation, experimentation, and testing, which is the ultimate judge of the truth of a concept. Number two, if any exception to a concept can be proven by observation, then the concept is wrong. Number three, the number of scientists who believe something is irrelevant to the validity of a concept. I should say that again because I said it poorly there. The number of scientists who believe something is irrelevant to the validity of a concept. So it doesn't, what he's saying is there's no science by consensus. If you have 1,000 scientists say, yes, we all agree the earth is flat, it doesn't make it flat. That's not making it valid, the number of scientists who agree. That's a big claim by the global warming, global climate change and disruption folks, is look at how many agree, which, by the way, their numbers are all false. There never was 97% who agreed. Never. There's a study on that that shows how they fudge those numbers dramatically. Anyway, that's for another time. Number four, no government or other authority can decide the truth of a scientific concept. Do you get that? Government doesn't make something true or can't decide if it's true or not. That's not government's job. It's the facts. You can't let government decide. And number five, all scientists are skeptics. Okay, I understand they try and use that as a negative term for people like me who disagree with the climate change theories, that we are, well, they call us denialists, but at nice, at best, they call us skeptics. Well, all scientists are skeptics. It is important to doubt in order to test concepts and look in new directions. You have to challenge everything, even what you think you know. That's the only way you grow. Those are the five little things that are behind very important steps or concepts, if you will, philosophies behind scientific method. So, in general, we look for new law by following a process. First, we guess it. Then we compute the consequences of the guess to see what would be implied if this new law we guessed is right, that's scientific law. Then we compare the result of the computation to actual results in nature with experiment or experience, and then we compare it directly with observation to see if it works. If it disagrees with the experiment, then it's wrong. In that simple statement is the key to science. It does not make any difference how beautiful your guess is. It does not make any difference how smart you are or who made the guess or what his name is. If it disagrees with the experiment, it is wrong, and that is based on Richard Feynman from Caltech, Nobel Prize-winning scientist. So how well do the claims and assertions in the just-released 890-page report stack up against the unequivocal real-time data? Let's apply the scientific method, as outlined by Feynman, to this report. First, we'll just state each assertion made, and this will be fairly quick. I'm not going to take a lot of time with it here because we've already been going a while, but I think this is terribly important. We'll state each assertion and then test it against real-time observational data. The report begins with dire predictions based on computer models. So let's start with that. Their assertion, quote, temperatures are projected to rise another 2 to 4 degrees Fahrenheit in most areas of the United States over the next few decades. By the end of this century, a roughly 3 to 5 degree Fahrenheit rise is projected under a lower emissions scenario, and a 5 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit rise for higher emissions, meaning that even if we reduce CO2, we're still going to get 3 to 5 degrees of increase. But if higher emissions continue, 5 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit, well, that certainly sounds scary. Fact. How do we check the validity of this prediction? Well, we can look at comparisons of previous computer model results, they're using the same models, to recorded satellite temperatures. And there is a plot that they have in this article I'm reading, but I'll just state it to you. Figure 2 shows Roy Spencer's plot of 44 of the latest climate models versus satellite measurements. As his graph shows, the models were not even close to the real measured temperatures. The obvious conclusion here is that the models failed miserably, a fact admitted to by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change in their latest report. The modeled temperature predictions fail verification from measured temperatures and thus fail the Feynman test. If it disagrees with the experiment, it is wrong. We can therefore confidently conclude that the National Climate Report temperature predictions are not valid. They're based on models that don't work. At this point, we might ask, since virtually everything else in their report is based on these computer models, doesn't that invalidate everything that follows? It certainly invalidates their dire predictions. But the report also contains assertions that are based on claims other than from models. And there's more that he goes on to talk about in this article when it comes to that. Now, I've already done this. I've already gone over these a lot with you, so I'm going to tell you right now that what we're looking at doesn't follow their predictions at all. There have been no temperature increases for 17 years. Sea levels are not rising at any unprecedented rate and, in fact, have begun to slow down. We don't have polar bears dying. We don't have Arctic ice shrinking. In fact, Arctic ice made a dramatic comeback in the last year and a half, 2 years. Is now at within normal levels, one or two standard deviations of normal in the Arctic, while the Antarctic is well above normal and global ice is above normal. So ice isn't disappearing. Sea levels aren't rising. The Earth's temperature is not rising. Where is all the fear? Severe thunderstorms have not increased. They've decreased. Tornado numbers are down. Hurricane numbers are down. Drought levels are nothing unusual. We've seen much worse drought in the past before CO2 levels increased. Flooding numbers are not up. They're actually down. Wildfire numbers are down. What am I missing? What am I missing? Where is this extreme weather? Where is this global climate disruption? And by the way, even if there is a massive hurricane, a massive tornado outbreak, a major drought, huge all-time floods, whatever it might be, wildfires dominating the western half of the nation, can you tell me how that's man's fault? Can you say that that wouldn't have happened anyway? This planet, based on many estimates, is what, 4.5 billion years old? Doesn't matter what number you think it is. I don't care if you think it's 5,000, 4 billion, but the bottom line is our records only go back a couple of hundred years as far as surface data, satellite records only since the 1960s. So the fact is, there is a lot on this planet we have yet to see weather-wise, yet to record, yet to experience in our modern times. So to think that somehow anything unusual we see now is something that hasn't happened before is arrogance and ignorance. It is not science. And if you're going to make claims about man's disruption of our planet, you've got to be able to back those up with some kind of evidence. The models have failed. CO2 rising is actually a good thing, and it's been 10 times higher, 20 times higher in Earth's history. Up to 8,000 parts per million, probably greater than that. But that's what the ice cores show. We have been warmer than now, back in the medieval warm period. We had a little ice age, and that was from around 1300 to around 1850 AD, and we may be heading into our next one based on all current solar cycle forecasts. Now, I'm not worried about the next cooling or warming. We will adapt. But the bottom line is you don't want to make policy very regulatory disruptive. You want to talk about disruption? It's in policy coming from government to act on something which is not happening. Shutting down coal plants, going after fossil fuels as if these things are bad. They drive our economy. They give the United States the freedom it has. It is the fuel of our economy, literally. Solar and wind will never do it. They are actually quite toxic sources of energy. If you don't know that, look it up. Solar and wind are highly toxic, and they fail. Solar and wind are not efficient. They're not green. They're not pleasant. They have been tried for more than 100 years, and they're fine if you want to put a little, solar panel up in your backyard or maybe a small little wind turbine just to have fun with. You're never going to power anything. You're not going to drive cars with solar and wind. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to fly airplanes with solar and wind. It's not going to happen. You need fossil fuels. It is immediate. It's on demand. It's reliable, and it's more plentiful than we could ever imagine. And with cleaner sources of fossil fuels, CO2 in the atmosphere, great news. Fewer particulates and pollutants, great news. Where's the downside? So the fact is, and again, I'm willing to take all feedback. I can't reply to it all. I mean, there's great scientists out there doing that, and I haven't simply got the time because I don't run a professional radio show. That's not what I do. I serve private clients with forecasts based on real weather data, not based on hyped weather data or falsified models or adjusted temperatures. It's just scary what's going on to try and prove a point within governments around the world, and yet the reality is none of this stuff is happening. And by the way, that's why even after this report was released, there was hype, all kinds of excitement the first couple of days, then the media dropped it, the public didn't care, and it's still at the bottom of the list of what people worry about. You know why? Because nothing's happening and people know it. They're more concerned about jobs and their freedoms and other things in life, their health care, for Pete's sakes. They're certainly not worried about something that's not happening. There's no signs of any climate change. If anything, we just got out of one of the worst winters in a long time across the United States. which again, because the left has nothing else they can hang their hat on, they decided, okay, yeah, cold is caused by global warming too. Oh, no, we're not calling it that. Cold is caused by climate change. Well, cold is caused by global climate disruption. So whether it's cold or hot, dry or wet, severe, non-severe, it doesn't matter. Whatever it is, they claim it's global climate disruption. You see, by claiming everything is part of it, then there's no way you can refute their claim. But you are refuting their claim. And you are refuting their claim because you're not buying their claim. And by not buying it, we're not passing ridiculous laws based on junk science started really back in the 1970s with the initial global cooling scare. But it wasn't global cooling based on natural cycles. If you remember, global cooling in the 70s was based on man polluting the atmosphere and causing solar dimming. We were blocking out the sun, and that's why the planet was cooling. Until it wasn't. In the late 70s, and we started warming up in the 80s, so now we couldn't go with global cooling, we had to shift to global warming. But then the warming stopped, so we had to go to climate change. Really, I don't know who buys this. The fact that anybody is left out there who actually buys this is scary to me, is sad, because just how uneducated do you have to be, or power hungry do you have to be? Uneducated, I could sort of give you some credit for, you're not taking the time, that's your fault, foolish, you should learn this stuff. But power hungry, that is your fault. Because now you're just using the scare tactics and government grants and money to advance an agenda which is, you know, it's false. But hey, it's lining your pocketbooks and buying you nice things, all based on a false premise. And it's certainly not advancing science, though I will say this. Out of all these negatives come positives, and I love the fact that all of this is out there because it has led to more debate in the scientific community, despite the fact that they claim the debate is over. It's actually led to more. And it's led to more research, and it's led to more access to research, and it's been fantastic to see the amount of research coming out because of all the claims made by the junk science hoaxers. This is great. Without all of them, we probably wouldn't have spent as much time looking at ice cores and tree rings and history all the way back to thousands and thousands of years ago. Oh, sure, we might have in the scientific community, but you wouldn't have heard about it. So now it's out there in the public, and this is so much fun. Because even I am learning more about it than I ever would have looked into. I'm a meteorologist. So I don't spend a lot of time looking at climate from 1,000 years ago. Weather people focus on the shorter term. But now I've become quite the climate expert looking back at things because I've had to as part of what I do on a day-to-day basis. So, hey, thank you. Thank you, global warming hoaxers, for that. But the downside is they have created a lot of regulation, which is in effect. And it's costing us a lot of money, and it's hurting coal-powered plants, and it's hurting our fossil fuel industry. It's hurting our economy, all based on a lie. So we need to keep working. We got to fight that. We got to vote people in who are going to overturn these policies. We've got to vote people in who understand truth, facts, not junk science, not agenda, not scare tactics. And it's sad and scary, really, that our own government is out there trying to scare us so much to get into these policies, to get into a sort of a socialized world, if you will, of, you know what, we don't all need all that freedom because that freedom comes at a price and it's going to be global climate disruption. So let's give up some of our freedoms, but at least we know the planet will be saved. Well, you know what? Man, as hard as we try, cannot destroy the planet. We've tried. You can't do it. We can destroy ourselves, but we can't destroy this planet no matter what we do to it. It will come back. It has been around a lot longer than we have. It will be around well after we're gone. That's the nature of nature. But the fact is, we can't control it either. CO2 is a mere, oh, I forget now, what is it, 0.003536% of the atmosphere? It is so ridiculously small. The percentage of CO2 in our atmosphere, it does not control our weather. As a greenhouse gas, it is the smallest or one of the weakest and smallest. Water vapor is about 95% of our greenhouse gases. And no one's complaining about water vapor. That's a good thing. Without the greenhouse effect, by the way, our planet would be frigid. We would die. We need the greenhouse effect. We need greenhouse gases. And CO2, I want more of it. I'm looking out at green trees as I record this, and I want to see them green every year. And I want to see more green. And studies have shown, study after study, that the more CO2 you have, the more plants grow, the more crops produce, fruits, vegetables, things like that. It's just a good thing. So let's continue the good thing. Keep burning your fossil fuels. Keep fighting for your freedom. And please educate yourself on this whole climate disruption thing. It's not reality. The reality is things have gotten a lot quieter. And my fear is that when things do finally start ramping up and we get big hurricanes and tornadoes again, that we're not going to be prepared. We're going to be spending too much time blaming it on man when man has nothing to do with it. And we're not going to be simply adapting, which is what man, especially here in the United States, has been known for. We are known for adapting. We came here to this wilderness of a country and turned it into the amazing nation it is now. You can't do that without adaptation. The fact is, we learn to adapt just as animals do. They all adapt. That's how we've all survived. Species die off, new species come into life. It happens. It's the natural cycle. Stop fighting nature. I'm meteorologist Rich Appuzo. You've been listening to this special edition of our climate change show and the weather rush here on the Flypod. Now, we normally do this once a year, but if they keep putting out these reports, we'll do them more often and keep you updated, so keep checking back. Until then, keep your eyes on the sky and enjoy the changing weather.